This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. We've begun noticing something interesting when some of us have gone out to eat lately. Instead of being handed a menu on the traditional plastic-coated paper or a book form, some restaurants are handing us tablets. Chili's Grill and Bar has been testing tablets, allowing diners to order drinks and desserts, even pay the bill without having to flag down a waiter. Well, it's been so successful in the 180 or so test restaurants that the company plans to install tablet menus at most of its 1,266 U.S. restaurants. And the Real Seafood Company in Ann Arbor recently began using tablet menus. And that got us wondering about menus, about eating out. What does a society in the way it eats out say about all of us? Joining us is Dr. Rebecca Spang. She's with the Department of History at Indiana University, where she directs the Center for 18th Century Studies, and she's the author of The Invention of the Restaurant, and she joins us now from Bloomington. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
So when did eating out become an event, if you will, a form of recreation?
People, of course, have always had to eat out. For most of human history, most people haven't had kitchens of their own. They certainly haven't had dining rooms. And so people have eaten in the streets. People have requested alms. But going out as an enjoyable leisure activity, as something that you would plan to do even though you actually had a kitchen and a dining room and several servants.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that starts in the 1770s and the 1780s.
And where?
In France, and more specifically in Paris, actually.
Oh, well, we can thank the Parisians then as we plan our Friday night dinner plans.
That's right.
And why did that happen? What was behind that?
Well, to make a very long story short, what I have argued is that it emerges from the culture of sensibility, which is central to 18th century culture in many, many different ways. And part of the culture of sensibility is the idea that your physical taste and your aesthetic taste and your moral awareness of the world are all perfectly calibrated to each other. So that if you have very good taste in food, you must also be exquisitely sensitive to the suffering of others. And, of course, that's a social virtue. You don't want to display how sensitive you are to other people's problems sitting at home by yourself.
There you go. So
there you go out to eat, or in fact, in the very first restaurants, not to eat, but to show that your appetite is so exquisite that you can just barely manage to sip a little cup of restorative bouillon. That's why they're called restaurants. And make a public show of your private sensibility.
And then would we, it sounds like when you're saying sipping that cup of restorative bouillon, that we would not recognize the restaurant of the late 1700s as related to what we go in today, where we're having our monster portions.
Right, that's right. In the very first restaurants, we wouldn't recognize it. But interestingly, within 3 or 4 years, the first people calling themselves restaurateurs are also providing menus printed from very, very early on. And the idea is that, of course, since everybody's ailments and everybody's appetites and tastes are a little bit different, you can't just say, tonight we're serving pork and beans. So you give people the choice in the format of a menu.
And as you say, they were printed and handed as someone walked in.
Yes, they seem to have been from very, very early on. There is also a very long tradition in the French context, which we sometimes do still see today in various restaurants, of writing the menu either on a chalkboard or in what today would be a dry erase marker on a mirror.
Sure. We see that still very, very often. Or today's specials are there.
Yes.
when you come in, which is probably saves a lot of money not having to reprint a menu every day.
That's right. But I think it also is a way of asserting that what we're announcing as a special really is special.
Yeah. Did the restaurant concept jump pretty quickly to the rest of the continent, to England, and then did it make a quick jump across the Atlantic to America?
It's actually somewhat slow. for the first decade of the 19th century, you will find travelers from Great Britain, travelers from North America, from Germany, going to Paris and saying, wow, they have these things there called restaurants, and there are people eating in public, like middle-class families. This is so strange. And the British actually say, well, this is because the French, they have no sense of domestic home life. So it actually isn't, in the British context, the equivalent institution, which is not completely equivalent, would be a gentleman's club.
Okay.
They're the ones that have the famous chefs in the mid-19th century. And in the British context, it's really only at the mid to end 19th century when you start to see the building of really lavish hotels, like, say, the Ritz, that will then have restaurants in them run by French chefs. In the American case, the dynamic is a little bit different, in part because the country is, of course, being settled. People are moving and dispersing across the continent. So that's a somewhat different story.
You know, we see this move now towards these high-tech menus with the tablets. Chili's research found that the tablets lead to higher tips, to people ordering more appetizers and desserts, and it also gets diners out faster. Do you see these tablet menus as a helpful development or something that's potentially negative?
I cannot say that I'm enamored of it because it immediately reminds me that tomorrow morning when I go to the airport, I am going to have to check myself in. And I'm going to have to check in my own bag, too. And that has allowed airlines to lay off workforce. So people are being replaced by machines. The argument is, of course, that it's more efficient. But I wonder about that, and I wonder at the human cost. And certainly when I think about how harried the few remaining airline employees always seem to be, I wonder about it. And it seems to me that part of the attraction might be the sense of immediacy that it gives diners, that there isn't anybody between them and the kitchen.
Yes.
And, I mean, there's a long, long tradition of anecdotes about rude waiters, surly waiters, incompetent waiters. And so it would seem that the tablet allows us to go out to eat without having to interact with other human beings at all.
Very interesting point. We'll have to see if this is just a fad or a development that academicians 100 years from now will be talking about.
Right. And if they are, they will link it to the related phenomenon of people sitting there taking photos of their dinner with their telephones.
Oh, which I'm sure the first Parisians would be just aghast. Dr. Rebecca Spang with the Department of History at Indiana University. Her book is The Invention of the Restaurant. It's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much, Dr. Spang.
You're very welcome. Good to talk to you, too.